right. You're listening to KWVA Eugene. Now it's time for Anarchy Radio. It's just me and John in the studio tonight. Going to have all the regular news and events, action news, and more. Your calls at 541-346-0645. Here's John.
The music of Joaquin Rodrigo. Is that right? Yep. Okay. Yes, indeed. 541-346-0645. I have heard from the Next Nature people. Just got to lead with this because maybe you can help me out. Next Nature, which is, of course, the nature that is created by humans. It's kind of a lot like real nature, except it isn't anything like real nature. It's supposedly wild and unpredictable. And yet they sort of pride themselves on the fact that they're doing sort of Frankenstein-like things is just more domestication, which isn't too wild and predictable or unpredictable. It is, for example, one of the things they were displaying is the Labradoodle. This just gets so wacky, except that it's really creepy. You take a Labrador and a poodle and manufactured animals. Next Nature, it reminds me of Let's Build a Smarter Planet from our friends at IBM. Well, they're going to have some kind of gala business in Amsterdam on November 5th, to which I've been invited. They apparently want somebody to debate their plans for creating nature. It's you got to check it out. Just Google it. Just check it out. Next Nature. I know I've referred to it somewhere or another in some somewhat recent writing. Here's the thing. They want to send me over there, put me up and everything for November, the thing on November 5th, whereupon I would give a 12-minute talk to rebut all the zany stuff in 12 minutes. So my response was, does that seem feasible to you? Fly around the world for 12 minutes? I mean, that's a little wacky, isn't it? Although I'm thinking, actually I got a response to that saying, well, we can arrange more stuff, maybe some sort of debate that's bigger or some kind of other part of the event in some way or another. And I'm thinking, and here's the point, the reason I'm bringing this up, if there could be something else, I'd love to see people there and maybe be part of some discussion, some kind of public thing. So you could write me at JZ Primitivo if you are happen to be listening from Holland, or you know somebody there if you have contacts. It isn't that far away, November 5th, but I just might take their money and their airfare and lodging and, you know, kind of take advantage of it. So let me know if you can help out with that. At the other end of the month, November 30th, I'll be down at Fresno State. Public lecture. It's some kind of ethics and politics series. They do this every year, at least once a year. And Andy Fiala has set this up, and I think maybe Mike Becker will be there. Looking forward to that. Well, Libya, the Gaddafi regime has evidently fallen, and the media, the number one overarching question is about the transition to order, functioning authority, building institutions, to make sure that nothing really does change. So you got this smooth one government to the next government thing. It's well known. Don't know what will happen there, of course. But there, in this country, the U.S. government actually came to a stop for a few hours today because of the 5.8 earthquake in the Northeast and the East Coast of the U.S., which caused a lot of government buildings, if not all government buildings, to be evacuated. Pentagon was evacuated, and people were standing around in the streets looking at their cell phones for a few hours. Kind of rare, a major earthquake on the East Coast. Well, let's see. Let's get into some other stuff. And I have several commentaries that I think would be worth kicking around. Different approaches to things. But first, a few things. There is a giant oil sheen in the Gulf of Mexico, about 180 miles southwest of the Macondo well, which, as we know, last April killed 11 people and led to the worst offshore oil spill in history. It's a little murky what's going on there. And meanwhile, pressure mounts on Royal Dutch Shell in England to explain how 1,300 barrels of oil could have leaked from a pipeline in the North Sea. And this has kind of tarnished Britain's reputation for avoiding such problems. Of course, it isn't, it's never really avoided. And there's been another exposed pipe rupture in the Missouri River flood zone. As much as 3,300 barrels of natural gas liquids ruptured early Saturday in Iowa. That was following the one. This is another result of what's called scouring, when erosion, when flooding uncovers the pipelines. They're no longer buried on the floor of rivers. And that was last month, 1,000 barrels of crude into the flooded Yellowstone River in Montana. The number of illnesses tied to ground turkey, the salmonella, rising, and a second child died this month from a deadly parasite that grows in stagnant waters. It grows in waters that have never had this sort of thing before. In Richmond, Virginia, 9-year-old Christian Strickland died from amoebic meningoencephalitis, which is also called, not to put too fine a point on it, brain-eating disease. Yes, siree. Well, there was another thwarted school shooting plot. You might have heard about this one in Tampa. This kid was busted, 17-year-old student busted on Wednesday. Planned to be more casualties than the 1999 Columbine High School massacre, in which 15 ended up dead, which is a biggie for high schools, not for schools in general, because 2 years ago, of course, at Virginia Tech, more than twice that many dead. And it cannot go unmentioned, more family massacres. I'm not even going to run them down. Multiple children slaughtered by their parents, one or more of their parents. Yeah, got to point it out. And the weather disasters, we're in late-ish August, but some incredibly volatile weather. And how about for the year, as destructive in terms of economic loss as any on record? Normally, there are three or four different kinds of disasters of $1 billion in damages each. There were nine this year already, and we're getting into hurricane season. The military has been working very hard on dealing with suicides among the troops, active and non-active military people. Giant resources. And yet July was a record 32 dead. It's reaching epidemic levels, unprecedented numbers of people killing themselves, a record number of soldiers doing that. And a study from the Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, I thought this was interesting. They found that people with depression, this is a study of women, people who had depression were 29% more likely to suffer a stroke. That isn't real surprising, the interrelationship there. This is from the journal Stroke last week. And here's a great technological thing that we can feel hopeful about. What was the thing we were talking about last week? Some kind of drug or something? What was it? Some kind of zany... what was that? It was an odd kind of claim, drug technology or something that would... I'm blanking on that one. Wasn't there something like that? It was some... We were laughing about it.
I don't remember.
Or was it the week before? Anyway, this is like that one, whichever that was. There's a drug called SRT-1720, and it has been determined that the use of this drug among mice, fat mice, obese mice, creates a condition or a situation where the attendant diseases that, that usually come along with obesity in terms of the liver and so forth, Shrugged Off by SRT 1720. So, of course, the implication is you can be as large as you like. Once we get the SRT 1720, it won't matter no more. We'll just be inert, big old piles, and take the drug. The obese mice that didn't take the drug succumbed to various related conditions, diabetic conditions and others. They're pointing this out. This is in the New York Times last Friday. Drug that makes it cost-free to be obese may seem more a moral hazard than an incentive to good health. Of course, that's not right. That can't be it. Yeah. And this is some random stuff that's sort of vaguely related to health. North Dakota ranks first in the Gallup Healthways Well-Being Index. In other words, they're the happiest. They're the happiest state, relatively speaking. And right next to that, this is in today's New York Times, right next to that little story was this one. Climate change study. The world's urban areas will continue to expand at a rapid rate, especially in coastal zones most exposed to the dangers of rising sea levels. A new analysis said. So maybe better think about North Dakota instead. And I don't know why. You know, if anyone who knows anything about college football, I'm talking about college sports here, the scandals are just kind of unbelievable. Anybody who really has paid attention to this, and it's better if none of you have, like Carl or Chase, or anyway, it's just racked with scandals, just these incredible corruption. They're just paying all these people. Everybody knew that. I mean, and everybody's taking drugs. You know, it's just well known. I mean, what do you think? These people are students, and they're not being paid. I mean, you got to be a dumbbell. Even though culturally, you know, college football, rah-rah, you know, it's just good, clean student athletes and all that sort of thing. It's way busting open. And Handsome Furs. You know Handsome Furs? I guess it's kind of a... It's a split off from Wolf Parade from Montreal. Mm-hmm. I guess I was reading this thing yesterday. Dark but danceable visions of a chilly technological future caught my eye. Kind of a big music review piece, yesterday's New York Times. I think we played some Wolf Parade. Somebody
asked for that.
Yeah. Okay. 541-346-0645. Wanted to get into, before the lovely action news and the crazy high-tech news, and some labor news even that sort of thing. Just wanted to kick this around a little bit from now until the break, I guess. The elusive big idea. This is the weekend before last. I missed it the first time around. Excuse me. Neil Gabler, who has written some interesting stuff about the nature of American society, American culture. This is a piece called The Elusive Big Idea, and it's a little obvious when you think about it, but he's pointing out that we are now in the post-idea world, alongside the social networking world. I don't know what the connection is there, but there used to be at least some ideas, you know, some ideological battles that had a little bit of depth that did involve some well thought out positions, you know, and I was thinking of that myself, like these, we were saying William Buckley or Dick Cavett, they'd have these people, Mailer, Gore Vidal, and other even more strictly political people. But now there aren't any ideas. This is just kind of the end of the line for thinking. It's just, what's the point of that? There's a lot of communication, but nothing's really being communicated. Pretty good piece, The Elusive Big Idea. And kind of along those lines, I've been pondering this whole thing about how anarchism is what is happening. And I've referred to different people who've said that, who many of whom are not anarchists. We're not pounding their own, you know, blowing their own horn or patting themselves on the back, but that's what's going on in terms of resistance, in terms of new ideas. The question is, are the ideas new? Is that bubble not going to burst if we find out that they're not new ideas? Anyway, very recently, Anarchism, the A Word, by Yuri Gordon, and I've enjoyed his work. He teaches in Israel, and he's part of Anarchists Against the Wall, actually. He wrote Alive, Anti-Authoritarian Politics and Practice to Theory, came out in 08. And the main thing here, and I think this touches on something, he's saying that part of this, or the biggest part of this revival of anarchist stuff, attention to the anarchist milieu and who else is doing anything but the anarchist kind of thing, was, he says, largely the result of the rediscovery in recent decades of anarchist values and tactics. And I think I put this in different ways, but the same basic point. Anarchist values and tactics, in other words, the ethics of it, the anti-authoritarian approach as an approach, as a tactical, as a way you do things. But there's also the question of goals. There's also the question of the telos. What, you can have values and tactics, but in the service of what? In other words, that's still, of course, that's still being thrashed out. I mean, it doesn't cover the whole thing to talk about values and tactics, to talk about practice while leaving out the point of it, where it wants to go, insofar as we're thinking about that. Well, here's another commentary. Gee, I've got, well, let me take aim at another one that won't take very long to talk about. American Decline by Noam Chomsky. This has been posted and this has been kicked around in the past week or two. And part of it, Chomsky is referring to different people who are pointing out the sad state of American politics and so forth, and the kind of wretched Tea Party ambience, and different things like that. There isn't anything. The whole game of electoral politics has been more and more debased. And I just thought, the ending of it, I think, it just kind of amazes me. It doesn't surprise me, but Chomsky ends this little essay called American Decline by saying, by shredding the remnants of political democracy, the financial institutions lay the basis for carrying the lethal process forward, etc. The remnants of political democracy. Now, I wonder when that political democracy was around, was on offer. Seems to me that Zinn, for example, pointed out that at the very beginning, the fight over the Constitution back in the 18th century, the whole thing was to protect the rich and powerful against the debtors and other small farmers and the rest of the riffraff. Or wait, wasn't that the age of, maybe that was the age of political democracy? If it was, we missed it. You know, there was the Whiskey Rebellion, the Shays Rebellion. These were the struggles against the Constitution. But maybe I'm reading a lot into this, but the remnants of political democracy seems to more than strongly imply that we once had a political democracy. I don't want democracy, by the way. It's just a form of government. But this is just a liberal piece, just barely liberal, that, you know, let's take the country back kind of nonsense. How about let's understand the nature of this whole system from the get-go. That just seems like a very dumb piece, even for Chomsky. Now, here's something from Toledo Liberation. I think I saw this Anarchist News, I'm not sure, a few days ago. Lessons from the failure of deep green resistance. Yeah, I think it's worth bringing up again, because I think this is a well done piece, just a page and a half, I think it is. Yeah, lessons from the failure of deep green resistance. I think it was just posted a week ago. And he points out, he or she or they, three main problems in terms of the failure of DGR. One is, the biggest one, according to this author, hierarchy. The Acceptance and Promotion of Hierarchy by Deep Green Resistance. The authors devoted a whopping 3 pages to its justification, and their argument is that this is a crisis, an emergency, no time for consensus and that sort of thing, command structure and all that, which has come out in various venues aside from this one. So that's, you know, that's just a big old turnoff. And the fact that they promote it and defend it should be pointed out. There's some people that probably are not aware of it, or they don't really want to think about it because, after all, this is the crunch time and we can't be worrying about things like that. The second one is this separation of the above ground and below ground groups, which just seems weird. Many people have seen that, I think. And part of it, just on the face of it, just to announce that and make that demarcation. And the main point here from Toledo Liberation is that, as they put it, I see the above ground as the authors of Deep Green Resistance, and those that don't dissent from the authors, who are afraid and or don't want to risk their privilege to do the direct action. In other words, that he's quickly making that assumption that that's exactly what it sounds like. The people that are directing this, that have drawn this up, created this whole organization, insofar as it exists, not just on paper, but they're not going to be the underground ones. They're not going to be doing anything illegal. And they pretty much say that. You know, that's really quite clear. And another thing, and this gets back to, I've mentioned this, I pondered this in terms of the question of hope, and the things that are really hopeless, as Derek Jensen has pointed out, that what that leads into, it seems to me, is this thing about how there's not going to be any shift in society. People are not going to get it. People are too stupid to get it. That's the third point here. It's often said in the book and in their presentations, that ain't going to happen. That's why we need this elitist group with its command structure and field general thinking. I just do not accept that as a given. You can count the different ways that's counterproductive. I mean, I think the arrogance of it, to start off, it strikes me as just write everybody off. They're not smart like you. How did you get there if everybody else is too much of a mutt to figure it out? Very questionable, to put it mildly. And this is a way more specific thing that I got from my friend Dan, who is part of HODADS. In this area here in Eugene, Oregon, HODADS was a tree planting collective started in 71. They're just celebrating their 40th anniversary of its founding. It's dead now, but and it's kind of clear that, you know, people have gone their different ways, including some of these people who are creating this worker democracy with its, you know, its radical aspects are top-level Forest Service people. Some of them are. Many people aren't. I mean, the point isn't that they all just became the enemy somehow, but one of the things is, and it has a wider application, I'd say, Dan was pointing out that HODADS was completely dependent on clear-cutting, because the contracts that HODADS got for these groups that would take up these, that would bid to replant, to go in there and do the tree planting, according to law, the timber corporations had to do that. They had to plant so many trees. They had to, for one thing, it's you know, these tree plantations, tree farms, by the way, it's not forests. And you know, it became kind of clear, and probably the butt of many cynical jokes, when the clear cutting stops, there won't be any more HODADS, because it's exactly dependent on that. And of course, we could say that about industry across the board. You know, it's dependent on clear cutting, meaning in a general sense, the systematic destruction of the natural world. So, anyway, kind of worth pondering on the 40th anniversary. And there were some great people. Dan had some fantastic experiences there. He doesn't have any bitter, you know, what a crock it was. And even though with these limitations, there were some wonderful people there throughout the years. Anyway, just wanted to kind of share that in practice, the Hodad's experience. And people around here know a lot about that. And
Anarchy Radio.
Well, we may have a call. I think we might take a break if we don't have a call.
Is your radio on?
And we got a lot of good action news.
Okay. What's your name?
Oh, okay. We do have a call. We'll work this in. 541-346-0645. Is there a call?
No.
Hello? No call? Okay. Somebody seems to be confused. We're gonna play some music and come back with as much other stuff as we can work in, and maybe hear from you. Music?
No, it's another person who was failed to listen to the radio before they called in.
I see. Always a good idea. Okay, what is this music? I forgot.
No,
oh, Philip Glass. Little Philip Glass. We'll be right back.
very dramatic music for you, John.
Yes, I know you don't like the histrionic music.
That wasn't too bad.
I don't know. That wasn't too bad. Okay, on to action news. Earlier in the month, the arson attack on a closed-circuit TV camera in Leipzig. Leipzig, Germany, over 5,000 euros damage. My masked persons doing huge damage. Eight black-dressed persons. I love the translation. Last Tuesday night, community policing office in Portland, in southeast Portland, was smashed up the night of August 16th. We don't view community policing programs as positive steps toward police accountability or abolition, but rather control and snitch culture into our communities. Yeah, they're not taken in by that. And let's see, on Wednesday in Madrid, violent clashes took place as the Pope visited, and part of the impetus for that was the amount of money spent on the Pope's visit at a time when severe economic austerity things are going on to people in Spain. Wednesday night, the 17th, in Gothenburg, Sweden, the country's second largest city, several officers were attacked by youths hurling rocks and Molotovs. Yes, this is not immediately clear what provoked the unrest, but police say two people were arrested for vandalizing a streetcar just before midnight Tuesday, and this could have sparked the melee. Two police cars were vandalized, and one other car was incinerated. No arrests have been made. Also Wednesday night, two cop cars in Fresno were torched up in solidarity with everyone fighting against police brutality in the police state. At least two cars burned, and they mentioned the murder by Fresno Police Department of Carl Maggiaroni. This is all business as usual for the pigs. See you in the streets. 26 luxury cars torched in the past 2 days. 138 total this year, talking about Berlin. In fact, there were 11 in 1 hour in Charlottenburg, which is a neighborhood of Berlin. And on the weekend edition of Wall Street Journal, a big article called Berlin Authorities Struggle to Stop Car Burning Surge. The total is over 320 in Berlin for the year so far, mainly your luxury cars. This is kind of a staple. This is really something. They can't do anything about it, evidently. In some cases, arsonists have placed barbecue charcoal lighters on tires. Various ways to do it. They have hosed down a car's hoods and then torched it up with accelerants. This situation is worsening, if you want to look at it that way. And Friday night, early Saturday morning in Barnet, London, North London, ALF type attack on a McDonald's there. They used hammers on the glass but couldn't break it, so they emptied 5 liters of gas on the furniture out in front and set that on fire. This is clearly, given the graffiti, clearly an animal liberation action. And this is your wimped out action here. 70 people from across the U.S. and Canada were arrested at the White House this morning. I think it's Saturday morning. Hoping that President Obama will deny the permit for a massive new oil pipeline. Yeah, more on that. This is the 1,700-mile pipeline proposed from the Alberta tar sands all the way down to the Gulf. Bill McKibben, the noted weenie Bill McKibben, he was wearing his suit and tie, and he was hoping that we'll see the old Obama emerge. Wow. Yeah, this is a file under meaningless nothingness, pretty much, I'm afraid. On Sunday, in the wee hours, a local police station in Moscow was set on fire. Greetings to all current and future guerrillas. And on Monday, last night, in the town of Khimki, you know the famous forest there, anarchist guerrillas burned a police car. This is near the road that they're building through the Khimki forest. another act of resistance. And yesterday in San Francisco, another BART demo, second in 7 days, trying to disrupt the action after BART shut down wireless service the last time around, which was August 11th. More than three dozen were arrested in a chaotic action that snarled traffic and train service during the evening commute. People clogged up the place, and it was a three-hour protest. And a march was involved in that. Yeah, this whole Sousa Valley, no TAV, T-A-V, the high-speed train thing, front page story yesterday in the Wall Street Journal called "The Little Engine That Couldn't, Protesters Rail Against Train." What a clever title. For two decades, Alpine villagers have prayed, sued, and fought to stymie it. You remember the almost 200 pig casualties about 3 weeks ago? Trouble with this article, it's a very predictable thing. It's all about the organization No TAV. And No TAV, from what I've heard, is they really try to suppress the real action, the real resistance, anything that's illegal. They try to enforce that the practice will be only symbolic action. Fortunately, there's a much more radical quotient among various types of people there in the Sousa Valley, east, or rather west, northwest of Turin, up in that corner of Italy. And this week, students at the University of Glasgow, after a 200-day, more than 200-day sit-in, the cuts were caused by the surrender of the president of the university, Anton Muscatelli. So a nice victory there. Some 6 months of sit-ins. They have they occupied parts of the university there in Glasgow, almost 200 days. Longest running student occupation in UK history, and they claim that it's not over yet, that they have more stuff in mind. Well, 1,000 fishermen and farmers on Jeju Island off the coast of South Korea have been fighting a naval base. This is quite an ongoing thing. Off the southern coast of South Korea, it's South Korea's southernmost major island. They really don't want any naval base for the U.S., that is. And going strong. We'll see how that goes. And also from South Korea, from a squat, the Cafe Marie, it's called Marie, in Seoul, South Korea. This Sunday, the 28th, there'll be a discussion on anarchist punk about that. So there's a squat and a discussion on Sunday. This is kind of interesting, or potentially interesting. You might have read about Anna Hazare, who's this anti-corruption activist in India. He's on a hunger fast. Way lots of corruption in India. And in the context of all the building of shopping malls and car plants, the rampant consumerism, the attack on the Adivasis, the native folks there, the attacks on the villages and the forests. A Gandhi model galvanizes India. And I think what is potentially interesting, and on our two trips heretofore, brought this out, not in terms of this particular guy, but the Gandhian tradition in the sense of the advocacy of simple village-centered life, of self-sufficiency, the non-industrial model for life. This guy, anyway, is a son of a small farmer, and he's really turned people on. This could be helpful. He's in the second week of this hunger strike, and it could well be. It could supersede or transcend the corruption aspect. That would be reforming, cleaning up the same old system. It's just nothing radical with that. But it's there. It is, and it could go further than that. The 6th annual Victoria Anarchist Book Fair, Saturday and Sunday, September 10th and 11th, and they just put out their schedule, their program for the 2 days. That's only two weeks from this weekend, I guess. Wow. I have to say, in contrast, we were talking about this, in contrast to the Seattle Book Fair, the workshops there did not seem exciting. There's a lot of workshops in Victoria on offer coming up, and virtually every one of them I thought was really interesting, if not very, very exciting. And yeah, Spontaneous Resistance, about the flotilla to Gaza. Kevin Nisch is doing that.
Yeah, we got Johnny from Brooklyn.
Johnny?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of not related to the news, but you were talking about Uri Gordon earlier, and he was up here at a Blue Stockings bookstore last week or so, and I went and saw him speak and bought his book and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
Reading alive right now, but it was like an open discussion. It was anarchism and the stages of collapse or something along those lines, and it was pretty cool. I mean, it was kind of not elementary, but you had, like, you know, the two thickest glasses in there had the most to say, like, really, like, old anarchy is, I mean, that's kind of what I call it after, like, reading your stuff. I mean, it seems to be sort of what you call it. I mean, old anarchy, but you had this guy with the black anarchist little pin, and he's all, you know, about, I don't know why you're so anti-technological, and, like, Uri had this little graph or whatever, and he's talking about strategies, and, you know, strategies of anarchists, and, you know, direct action, and strategies we should have, and for some reason people got out of the strategies. Oh, so what you're talking about is lots of people are going to die, mass death, and I think that people just really trying to attack this, you know, this, I guess, primitivist way of thinking that, I see it as no other way, you know? How can these things the technology has done ever lead you to be, you know, optimistic about them? They have this longing for some optimism about technology and just who it's in the hands of. And I said, well, after the anarchist revolution, I mean, how are you going to make somebody, you know, spend 5 more hours in a burying mine or whatnot? And I don't know, it was just a lot of butting heads. We didn't really get anywhere, so I would have liked to hear more of Uri, but I thought that was cool that you brought that up. But I do think there's a lot of, like, defensiveness about the primitivist, like, mindset right now, but I think it's the new thing, and I think it, you know, I just, it's the truth, you know? So I really appreciate what you guys do, and glad I could call in, say a little piece.
Excellent, Johnny. Good to hear from you. So are you, is Uri kind of in the middle on that, or did he kick that off?
Did he what?
Did he kick that off, the discussion about technology and all that?
Well, not really even. That's the funny thing, is that the people who just, like, attacked it real quick, it was mainly about the strategy thing. And for some reason, this young girl was talking about mass death, and, oh, well, you're talking about mass death, like, who should die? And he's like, no, that's not all what I was saying. But then this old anarchist, like, quickly, you know, was like, he was like sprout, like, book chin and whatnot, and permaculture, and, you know, really just, I don't know, he was just really narrow-minded, and he kind of, like, led the discussion into nowhere. So, you know, it was kind of ridiculous. They really just, the anti-technology thing was just getting to them, and I don't know, really, but what else is there, you know? What is this leading to? I watched NCIV yesterday, mm-hmm. and I mean, I've read Endgame and whatnot, and a while back, and probably about a year ago, and I never heard of NCIV before, but thought it was real good. And, you know, it was funny, last week you guys, I was listening today, you guys were talking about the singularity that Kurzweil talks about and the transhumanists talk about and whatnot, and you know, that's just so ridiculous. And I think that's what people just still envision. Uri was talking about, you know, I used to envision, when I envisioned the future, I envisioned flying cars. Now I envision more of ivy and trees taking over urban architecture, you know, in the stages of collapse. And, you know, I think that would be cool, actually, up here. But, you know, so I don't know. But it was just a lot of, I don't know, where does someone like me go? You know, I theorize in my own head. I read, you know, people. I read you. I read whoever else. I read, like, Jirok. I'm trying to, you know, I read your little interview with him, which is cool. I think you had an interview with him, right?
Yeah.
About primitivism.
Yeah.
I was reading that not too long ago. But
have you seen Kevin Tucker's book, For Wildness and Anarchy? That's a good one. You'd like
that? No, I'm kind of like, I'm only 23, and, like, I'm really not active, and I'm from Kentucky originally, but I live in Brooklyn, and I'm a rapper, actually, and my name's Johnny Spanish, but I really don't really rap about this kind of stuff, but, you know, it's just me, in the past couple of years, I've just opened up, you know, I moved up here, you know, I voted for Obama or whatnot. I was like I just was naive, and I just really didn't see the charade and the curtain and, you know, the puppet strings behind the whole ordeal. And, you know, I was really focused on just, you know, me at the time, which, you know, I have to try to focus on myself rather than on, you know, all this stuff that weighs heavy on you sometimes, but
yeah,
you know, trying to take it in a new direction, and hopefully, like, I'm pretty good, man, and you know, hopefully something will happen for me soon. I'm writing a lot of hooks right now. I like sing, whatever, but I don't know. I just really want to. Where can we take it? Do we need an artist? Can I be that artist? Can somebody? Mm-hmm. Can we just try to move into something? I don't know, just something better, where you can't deny the truth, because there's only one truth. You know, there's only one. There's only one truth, man. It's crazy. I understand how wrapped up we are, and, you know, my best friends, some of them, you know, call me, oh, I'm a brainwasher now. Like, I get people to see how I think I'm a brainwasher. Like, I'm brainwashing people. I, like, show them hard, cold facts. They're like, that's bull. You know, I'm like, what do you mean? Like, I'll show you a congressional hearing on a videotape, and you still, like, will say it's not real. What is wrong with you?
There's a lot of defensiveness, huh? It's pretty darn clear and getting clearer. You know, we got to have something different, like you said. I mean, that's it. Yeah, I know. Right. I've been accused of demanding this party line fealty to certain ideas. And really, I mean, just because I disagree with you? I mean, so I hear you. But yeah, people have resisted. And but maybe that's a sign that it's getting through to people, you know, because it is, people do lock horns over this. And that's, you know, that's the first step, I guess. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's about breaking it down ideologically.
Yeah, yeah.
In your mind, and trying to, you know, just get over that. Listen, man, you don't belong to a certain, like, there's nothing in your DNA code that, like, makes you have to be like this. Like, just because your parents, like, you know, grew up in this and your grandparents grew up, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean you have to adhere to some strict way. It's like relearn, you know, relearn with the truth and the knowledge that we have at our fingertips right now. I mean, we know that there's not going to be any more fish in the wild in 40 years. We know to eat. You know, we know these things. We know all these things. And, you know, you can try to beat around the bush, but, you know, I like what Derek Jensen talked about. You know, people just think it's a given. Industrial civilization is a given. The economy is a given. You know, I've been listening to a lot of Bill Hicks recently. I don't know if you're a fan at all, but I don't know, man. He was preaching that, like, maybe not an anarchism, maybe, but he was reaching minds, you know, and, like, there's no big force, like, saying something different. I mean, they hush you, you know, they put you in the dirt. So, but I think that, you know, the young cat, I live in Bed-Stuy, and, like, out here, I mean, I talk to people all the time, you know, they're hip to, like, they're hip to change, you know, like, and it's a community out here, you know, like, so people would take care of themselves if something did happen, and people would be there. It's a police state over here. Yeah, they, like, basically want people to kill each other, you know? They really do. I mean, there's no other way. 79 precinct, probably the worst precinct in the country. I don't know. But they would stick together, and people have this, people are people, man, you know? Like, and this is the thing, I don't want to get all, like, Holocaust opportunist with it, but my dad was in the Holocaust, and he was in Gerst concentration camp, and he escaped, and they were on the run for 3 years. He wrote a book about it, like a young teen book, but whatever. It sucks that, like, you have to be, like, so close to a tragedy to, like, for this to, like, hit you in your brain. Like, you know, even my Jewish friends from home, I mean, the Holocaust doesn't mean anything to them. Like, you know, mass death doesn't mean anything to them. It's like, it's history, you know? It's like, it's a long time ago. Like, to everybody, you know, oh, civil rights are a long time ago. This is a long time ago. I'm like, what do you mean a long time ago? Like,
yeah.
What are you talking about? This is my father. You know what I mean? Right. This is I'm his seed. Like, he's old, you know? He's an old guy, 75. Sure. I'm young. He's like second marriage. I'm the kid of his second marriage. But, you know, it's like, you know, this is my father, like, and these are real people, and this is what happened to them, and what we are now is the stages of a closing society. Everything that's going on right now, it's the same thing of every closing society, of Hitler, of Mussolini, of Stalin, the Patriot Act, all these things, man, all these things were the first things these people were doing. These are the first things people were doing.
You got it.
They were taking away. They were taking away guns from the peasants. You know,
we gotta close that. Yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
We have to put an end to it. Well, thanks for calling, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, my bad. Sorry for ranting.
Oh,
all right,
that's
bro.
Good.
Thanks
for calling, John.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for having me on. Thanks.
Okay. See ya. Well, that guy said a mouthful. That's for sure. I was mentioning the book fair, by the way. A lot of great stuff. Bron Sokolsky, Stop the Raven Coal Mine. You know, these different things that the caller referred to indirectly, and all these things have to be dealt with. Animal Liberation and Anarchy, Pros and Cons of Tree Spiking by Zoe Blunt, I think it is. Anti-Colonial Struggles, Illegalism Through History by Aragorn. Frank Lopez going to be on hand. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of juice to this thing. It's going to be good. We know last week when Cliff was here, we were talking about the nanotechnology thing and the singularity, as Johnny mentioned, and also the Mexican Unabombers going on down there. At the same time in Portland, Cliff noted this later, the 11th International Conference on Nanotechnology going on at the same time. Yeah, speaking of next nature. Well, we don't have a whole lot of time, but gotta have one real whacked out techno thing. Yeah, people might not think this is so whacked out. Well, two. The first one is for sure whacked out. According to the Daily Mail, Harvard scientists are hoping to turn chickens into mini dinosaurs. In fact, this has already happened. Evolutionary biologist Arkot Obzornov developed chickens with snouts by cutting a hole in the shell of a chicken egg. It's a hole, you know, interfering with the embryonic development. Although the eggs cannot be hatched due to ethical restrictions, they're not going to be allowed to live, these chicken dinosaurs. Wonder how long those ethical restrictions are going to hold. This is really freak show stuff. How do they... Yeah. Chicken DNA, too whack to quite believe. This is from the New Zealand Herald yesterday. And what was posted today in the New Scientist... Possessed Hand, it's called, from Japan, designed by Emi Tamaki of the University of Tokyo, developed by the University of Tokyo and Sony Computer Science Laboratories in Tokyo. And what it is, you learn to play guitar even though you could have your eyes closed and nothing going on in your brain.
Can you be deaf too?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, no brain waves, no nothing. But you put
it's like underwater music.
Yeah, that's right. That's the secret of it. Oh, that hurt. Didn't hurt me, but
sorry,
Kevin. Anyway, it's a matter of electric stimulations that interact with the muscles and tell you what to do. I mean, they're provoking. Yeah, right. You never mind that you would have to learn something and develop some coordination and the sense of
music. I prefer
to
get an electrical shock when I do something wrong.
See, your music you're playing could be advanced, I bet, huh? By that stuff?
It could. Just attach electrodes to my nipples and...
Yeah, I'd play like Clapton or something. And, oh, man. Yeah, just like all of these things. They just... You don't need to be in any way conscious or progressing or thinking or moving or developing your sense, having any skills. This is another de-skilling thing. Obviously, you sit there, plug it in, and start twitching, I guess. It's par for the course. Perhaps not surprisingly, the players found it unsettling to have the device move their hand by itself. I felt like my body was hacked, because it was. But Tamaki is confident that people get used to the idea once they see how useful it can be. We believe convenient technology will overcome a feeling of fear. Yeah, people are not quite that robotic yet, but they got plans. Ooh. Well, I got a bunch more techno-fascist stuff, but... and of course, we're about to go out here, but... let's see, Saturday... I forget the source of that. Over 80 eagles are killed each year by California wind farm rotor blades. And an article in the LA Times called The Risky Side of Green. More accidents happen as more solar and wind projects go up. Of course, because they have to be at an industrial level. So they have every industrial problem and so-called industrial accidents. Well, I guess we got to let it go for now and... Make way for Chris.
Yep.
So I don't know who will be here with us next week. We'll just, maybe it'll be a surprise. Thanks for listening.